Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing the demigod's appeal to the Lord. It's Canto 8, Chapter 5, and the text today is 47. And can chant responsibly. Kesha Buri Alpa Sarani Karmani Vipudani Va Dehinam Vijayatanam Na Tata Varpartam Tvayi Klesha Buri Alpa Sarani Karmani Vipadani Vam Dehinam Vivayartanam Na Tatai Varpartam Tvayi Klesha Buri Alpa Sarani Karmani Vipudani Vam Dehinam Vishay Vartanam Na Tatai Varpartam Tvayi Shaburi Alpasarani Karmani Vipulani Dehinam Vishayatama Natatai Vipulani. The word for word, Klesha, hardship. Buri, very much. Alpa, very little. Sarani, good result. Karmani, activities. Vipalani, frustration. Va, either. Dehinam, of persons. Vishaya Artanam, who are eager to enjoy the material world. Na, not. Tata, like that. Eva, indeed. Arpitam, dedicated. Tvayi, unto your lordship. Translation. Lord Brahma, in addressing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I jumped a little bit. Karmis are always anxious to accumulate wealth for their sense gratification, but for that purpose they must work very hard. Yet even though they work hard, the results are not satisfying. Indeed, sometimes their work results only in frustration. But devotees who have dedicated their lives to the service of the Lord can achieve substantial results without working very hard. These results exceed the devotees' expectations. Report, Srila Prabhupada. We can practically see how the devotees who have dedicated their lives for the service of the Lord in this Krishna consciousness movement are getting immense opportunities for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without working very hard. The Krishna consciousness movement actually started with only 40 rupees, but now it has more than 40 crores worth of property. And all this opulence has been achieved within 8 or 10 years. No karmi can expect to improve his business so swiftly. And besides that, whatever a karmi acquires is temporary and sometimes frustrating. In Krishna consciousness, however, everything is encouraging and improving. The Krishna consciousness movement is not very popular with the karmis because the movement recommends that one refrain from illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. These are restrictions that karmis very much dislike. Nonetheless, in the presence of so many enemies, this movement is progressing, going forward without impediments. If the devotees continue to spread this movement, dedicating life and soul to the lotus feet of Krishna, no one will be able to check it. The movement will go forward without limits. Chant Hare Krishna. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. This is Lord Brahma addressing the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the shore of the Milk Ocean, together with the demigods. And he's doing something very interesting. He's contrasting the aim of the karmis, or the fruitive workers, with the aim of the devotees. So in the case of the karmis, or the fruitive workers, their aim is self-serving. It's to gratify or please their senses. And in the case of the devotees, the aim is quite different. It's actually dedicating the entire life, or the entire life of the devotee, to the service of the Lord. So it's quite a dramatic contrast. When you look at it from the point of view of being completely self-serving on the one side, and on the other side, completely dedicated to serving the Supreme Lord, it's a huge contrast. So this this aim of giving pleasure to the senses is accompanied by a huge anxiety. And that anxiety is, there's a necessity to accumulate wealth, because wealth is necessary to please the senses. And this is something that Lord Brahma has stated here. So this anxiety for ordinary prosperity can also be seen on the internal level as a kind of a physical fever. And I was reflecting on this a little bit this morning. There was a period of time in New York City where I was working under an extremely famous editorial photographer, and the person was responsible for, you know, that very extremely glamorous French Vogue. So he was responsible for most of the editorial content, or a lot of the editorial content. And I used to witness this huge fever on a daily basis, because the man would start his day, and this is, you know, as an assistant, one actually gets to see how the person's functioning. So the man would start his day by juggling some coins of how, you know, what his fortune would be that particular day. And then the day would proceed with inevitably some tantrums, because this prestigious person that was to be in front of his lens was not attired exactly how he wanted. And so there's and the whole thing was driven by a particular kind of prosperity that person wanted, and the prosperity that person wanted was fame. So everything to fit into his idea of the fame had to be exactly according to what his particular senses were dictating. So it's definitely a huge physical fever. So now this is quite different to dedicating one's life to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because such dedication brings with it not this concern with juggling one's fate or hoping one can change one's fate, but rather it's bringing with it this grace that's coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that grace takes the form of gradually reducing the temperature of this material fever. So that material fever is present in everyone. It's just that in the case of the devotee, there's a direct experience by the grace of the Lord of the material fever's temperature getting reduced. And what that proceeds to bring about is spiritual health. And that spiritual health is getting restored, where one is beginning to see everything in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's not that one is an isolated entity and one is attempting to control but understands one can't control and is constantly frustrated because one is imagining that one can control. So it's a very confused paradigm. So that spiritual health is, one is seeing things in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his hand, or his a kind benediction coming in every aspect of one's functioning. So here there's a nice example of that approach by Narada, the son of Lord Brahma. There's a part where he's describing a particularly dramatic moment in his life where he says, you know, his poor mother was going out one evening to milk a cow and she got bitten on the leg by a serpent. So this is how he responds to it. I took this as the special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for the devotees. So his understanding is immediately acknowledging or understanding that the particular event that's taking place is actually some kindness that's coming from the Lord. So it's that material fever getting reduced. So he's understanding this even as a small child, which is when this event took place. And this reduction in the material fever is actually going on at every step. And it's due to the benedictory direction that's coming from the Lord. So the odd or the difficult moments, in an ordinary sense, are accepted as a special mercy of the Lord. And they're steps in restoring one's spiritual health. So one can only think how unhealthy the existence is of the kami, or the fruitive worker, who's over time certainly experiencing ill health in many ways, psychically, emotionally, interrelationship-wise. One can see it very graphically. So, now Lord Brahma is also contrasting the extent of work involved in achieving this comfort of the senses. So he states, one has to work very hard. You know, if I go back to my example, you know, this person came to mind somehow in relation to this, the fruitive worker. The hard work of this person was at least an hour a day was dedicated to phone calls to the top editors of the different magazines, and then this huge anxiety of who would accept an invitation to lunch and who would not, because that was all part of, you know, getting the particular contracts that would lead to the fame. So it's extremely hard work, because and there's no certainty, because it relies on the good favor of others to allow one to achieve what one wants to achieve. So, and Lord Brahma says, even with such hard work, the results are not satisfying. And I recall, I mean, this person is very strongly in my consciousness this morning just because of this subject matter. I recall this person in moments of desperation, because, you know, the material fever is so high, then there would be phone calls to an affluent friend to try and change the course of events. So he would call Princess X that he was close to kindly intervene to allow for this particular arrangement, because she may be influential with a particular person, to allow for a particular session or contract to manifest. So always the results are not satisfying because there's no control. And with devotees living their lives dedicated to the service of the Lord, their substantial results, this is what Lord Brahma is saying, without working very hard. And the not working very hard is interesting because The Kami is grappling with very heavy material energy. And the devotee, on the other hand, has been freed from that weight. He's in a, or she is in a very protected space. So the work is easy for that reason, because one hasn't got the weight of material energy on one's shoulders. So Srila Prabhupada, he sees these substantial results that the devotees are able to achieve as being in the form of immense opportunities to perform service to the Supreme Lord. So if one were to say this to an ordinary person, that the results one is getting is more opportunities to do more work, may be a little difficult to understand, because generally the result is more on the emphasis for the Kami would be more on in which way there's the senses have received some pleasure. So, you know, there's been some acknowledgement in the world, the name has gone up in lights, something like that. So, now, I was thinking about this a little bit, too, these substantial results as being in the form of immense opportunities to serve. And I was reflecting on, just on a personal level, being called to by Nityananda Prime to come and serve here. And, you know, there's one little direction that's given, okay, you know, shape a school. And then one finds that, you know, through that benediction that's coming from Krishna, you know, one goes through the careful planning, brings together the teachers, and then somehow, you know, where there were 8 flagging students, just through performing service and the benediction coming at each step, then in a short while, oh, there's 40 students. How did that happen? You know, and it's like in a short while. So, and then that leads to more opportunities for service. One doesn't just rest there. Then, you know, the next thing comes, oh, there's an opportunity for training somebody in doing a particular methodology. And then more opportunities, and it keeps going like that. It's very, very exciting because areas open up that one hadn't even considered. So now, the fact that the results for karmis are not satisfying is explained by Srila Sukadev Goswami in a similar way when he's talking to Maharaj Parikshit. He puts it this way. I'll read the Sanskrit. It's from the 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the 14th chapter and 23rd verse. Ata cha tasmat ubayatapi ahi karmas mim atmanaha samsara vapanam ukha aranti. So this is the translation. Learned scholars and transcendentalists therefore condemn the materialistic path of fruitive activity because it is the original source and breeding ground of material miseries, both in this life and the next. So, breeding ground, it's quite, what would be the word, sounds a little diseased, because usually when one thinks of a breeding ground, one thinks of bacteria breeding or something very unhealthy. So it does lead to unhealthiness in terms of there being great miseries that the karmis have to experience. So much mental distress, so much criticism that comes, so much a sense of anxiety because of being helpless under the force of material nature. And Of course, the greatest suffering that in the next life there is having to live through all the reactions of whatever was done in this life. So it's just like very tiring going on and on. So now these sufferings are very graphically expressed as it's a kind of forest of that's in this material world. And the conditioned soul is sometimes bitten by envious enemies, which are compared to serpents and other creatures. Through the tricks of the enemy, the conditioned soul falls from his prestigious position. Being anxious, he cannot even sleep properly. He thus becomes more and more unhappy, and he gradually loses his intelligence and consciousness. In that state, he becomes almost perpetually like a blind man who has fallen into a dark well of ignorance. So that's from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 14th chapter, 23rd verse. So it seems almost difficult to understand that karmis or fruitive workers actually are not appreciating their wretched condition. This wretched condition of trying to live their lives in a way that's just perceivable by the senses. It must be something to hold on to, something to grasp, but it must be material. It seems almost bizarre that there isn't an understanding of how wretched the condition is. So, now, by contrast, that path of devotion to the Supreme Lord is such that every activity that one is performing, it's used to attain the favor of the Lord. So, this of course is very wonderful, because if one understands that Krishna is the complete whole, then connecting with that complete whole and calling for his favor or performing something for him in order to bring his favor upon one can only actually bring about that, you know, sense of completion, which is so lacking for the poor karmi. So acting in this way is very much in line with Lord Krishna's direction, yad karoshi yad ashnashina ya Yugosi dadasiyat yatapasvasi kunteya tat kurushva mat arpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do this, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. So Krishna's direction, the recommendation that everyone's working to maintain their body and soul together. Everyone's eating to live, and many persons are performing ritualistic ceremonies, and many persons are giving in charity, and in all cases, his direction is to do it for him. So, then if you're looking on the one hand, that unhappy condition of the karmis being miserable, that misery is connected to the fact that everything that's acquired isn't lasting. It's for a short period of time. I mean, material nature moves things around, and there's the karmic element, so nothing persists. And it's described that the materialists are generally very attached to bodily comforts. So that's where the attachment lies, because after all, everything is, you know, to please the senses. So the attachment is for those things that give pleasure to the body, the comforts of the body. And they're even attached to the bodily comforts that are lying up ahead. So they haven't yet appeared, but they're already attached to what new bodily comforts will be there. And on the other hand, the condition of the devotee is such that everything is constantly improving. And the reason this is so, that for the devotee everything is constantly improving, is because he's getting that favor of the Lord. So it's that spiritual dimension, the blessing, that's just allowing for improvement, constant improvement. And the devotee is becoming free from those attachments to bodily comforts. As Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Deha smriti nahi yara samsara bandhana kahan tarai. A person whose practice has freed him from the anxieties of bodily needs is no longer subject to those behavioral patterns that come from his being in goodness, passion, or ignorance. it's a huge weight that is lifted off one's shoulders, and a huge weight that's lifted in terms of even one's functioning being freed up. So the attachment that develops in the devotee is quite different. It's described as taking shelter of the holy name. So that's the attachment that develops within the devotee. And going to the extreme end of devotees that show this kind of great attachment to Krishna, of course the gopis, I'll just have to read it because it's very charming. Until today, our minds were absorbed in household affairs, but you easily stole our minds and our hands away from housework. Now our feet won't move one step from your lotus feet. How can we go back to Braja? What would we do there? So, it's a nice statement of the gopis that indicates something of this great attachment that's so freeing. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he's noting in this purport that dedicating life and soul to the lotus feet of Krishna will allow the Krishna consciousness movement to go on. So it's dependent on the individuals. And indeed, one can see that such amazing qualities come from that dedication, the renunciation, the knowledge. And and this is all something that's taking place in the body of the person that has devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Lord Brahma calls this results that far exceed the expectations of the devotees. One may not think of all the knowledge, one may not think of all the renunciation, but it comes very naturally. And this is borne out, Srila Sukadev, or Srila Sita Goswami, he, when he's responding to the early questions in the first canto of the Brahmanas, he says that by rendering devotional service unto the Supreme, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So this is Srila Prabhupada's particular kindness that through the Krishna consciousness movement, this particular science is actually open to all beings, and it's actually the topmost transcendental activity that allows one to achieve that contact with the Supreme Lord. And it's certain that is certainly a result that's beyond anyone's expectations, to directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, who could ever imagine such a thing? So, so the devotees, by engaging themselves in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they get a chance to overcome those desires for fruitive activities that many persons are completely entrenched in. And this is something that one gets to experience, going back to that earlier idea that temperature is dropping, that huge material fever. So these are some thoughts on this very nice verse from Lord Brahma, his statement to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If anybody has some thoughts to expand on this.
Thank you very much for the class. Since you explained this point, and Prabhupada explained the same point over here, we can practically see how the devotees who have dedicated their lives for the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness movement are getting immense opportunity for the service of Supreme Personality of Godhead without working very hard. So I was appreciating your comment or this point that materialistic people has to work really, really hard. And Krishna conscious person is also working really, really hard, much harder than the materialistic person. And nobody is paying him for the work. And for materialistic people, they're working for the pay, but even though nobody is paying him, he's working twice amount the materialistic person is working, but still he's happy. So this is an immense mercy of Krishna. So if someone says that Krishna consciousness is genuine or not, then we can say, okay, work for Krishna, you will find it out. You can say, work for Krishna, you will find it out, it's genuine.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, the capacity that gets revealed to oneself, that capacity to work to the degree that one works, and in many areas, and using so many abilities, and truly exploring those abilities. And of course, because it's in relation to Krishna, it's so joyful that what is the concern with monetary gain? It's so insignificant. Completely insignificant.
I was gonna just ask you, one can say, and you explained that for the devotees, the result, there's always a very progressive results. They're becoming, the experience is that, and Prabhupada mentioned in the purport, that for the devotees, that result even goes beyond one's expectations of the expectations of the devotees. For the karmi, it's the contrary, it goes, it degrades, to the point of frustration. So one can argue, and maybe you can comment on this, that externally, in very commonly, externally appears the opposite, that the devotees, are not necessarily achieving great things, I mean, in Prabhupada puts the example basically of himself, that in 10 years, from 40 rupees, he became, 40 crores of rupees, like that's, how much is that in I know, but how much translate into dollars? It's some millions and things, millions and millions, you know. So, so you know, in Prabhupada's case, it's very obvious, but sometimes we see, you know, our temples are not necessarily, you know, as struggling to get, you know, to keep up with all the, you know, projects that we have. And then you have other churches, you know, becoming very wealthy and have a lot of, you know, capacity, material capacity to progress like that. Externally appears. So what I'm saying is, you know, externally it appears that fruitive people are progressing more than the devotee. So maybe you can comment on that.
Well,
just the argument, you know, someone may argue, you know, the point that, you know, hey, you know, it appears that the devotee is not progressing as much as the karmi, you know. The argument, the what is presenting in the purport, and Krishna Archana Mataji also presented in the class, that that the devotee progress, the result is progressive, and the karmics is sort of regressive to the point of, so you know, one can argue against it, you know, like that.
Well, the best way to respond to that is the Sri Upanishad. I'm just going to read the mantra one and then comment. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So that's the success of the temples. Everything is directly given by Krishna according to what the capacity of the devotees is. So it means that everything is perfect. The karmis or the fruitive workers don't hold that concept that everything is owned by the Lord and therefore, you know, what you're given, you cherish, you utilize, and you know, you don't distract yourself with trying to think how you can get more than what is allocated to you, because there isn't the proper understanding. So there's constant frustration and lack of equilibrium because there isn't that understanding. Where the understanding is correct, there's equilibrium. And this is actually what allows for a peaceful atmosphere to be present. And peacefulness is probably the most cherished state that one could hope for. I mean, it's highly cherished and regarded. So with the correct understanding that everything is owned by Krishna, it's allocated by him, one can actually be peaceful, that everything's in orders as it should be in the temple. So it may appear that, you know, there's projects that could be done or there's projects that need attention, but that's fine. One understands, you know, one moves slowly towards that and Krishna gives as the capacity is there. Everything's in order. It's perfectly harmonious. If one contrasts it, perhaps, as you were doing with perhaps some secular religion where there is acknowledgement of God, but there's still the modes of nature operating because it's not having taken shelter in the transcendent nature of Krishna and therefore putting one's whole shelter in transcendence, then what is going on there is a lot of the modes of nature operating, and externally, you know, one can see, oh, perhaps schools have developed from some of those secular religions, or there's some social service structure that allows for the care of its members. And one could say, okay, in our society, that's not fully visible yet. I mean, one doesn't see too many day schools, and one certainly doesn't see that there's some social service network. But that's in order. It's growth over time, and because everything is owned by Krishna and one is given one's particular quota, one knows that as one grows, Krishna provides, and that's in order. One accepts it. It's perfect. It's peaceful. The other one is not sure. It's not actually necessarily completely peaceful because there's the modes of nature operating. So if one were to choose peaceful versus modes of material nature, certainly peaceful. So peaceful is the preferred atmosphere.
Yeah, that's a very nice answer. So if we measure progress in terms of material acquisition and material this, then one may say, oh, yeah, the karmis are progressing, but what is the result? What is the price of that material progress? But it's, you know, a complete, like you put it in your class, an anxiety and all kinds of, you know, this fever is becoming even more agitated. So in the case of the devotee, regardless if you have great material opulence, if Krishna provides or Krishna provides very little material opulence, you're still peaceful, you're still, you know, so that you say harmonious. So thanks, that's good.
I had a question where I feel that like in various texts when you read,
put the microphone closer.
It says that God has given everybody abilities, so it is also a requirement of God that in the human form of life we should be able to perfect our abilities to the utmost best. Like in other scriptures it is written that God chastises a person who has not developed his talents to the fullest extent. In the Bible you read stuff like that God chastises a person who has not, and even the ability that was given to him is taken away if he has not developed it to the fullest extent. And even in the Gita, like we read that God appreciates Arjun because he is not turning into a mendicant, but rather he is developing whatever line of work he was born into. He is perfecting himself to be a Kshatriya, and so he is following the dictates of his duty and not just becoming a mendicant. So isn't it also God's requirement that we develop our talents, whatever he has given to us, to the fullest of our abilities, instead of because that is also a form of worshipping God. If can one say it like that, because it is it not like just being a mendicant is like appreciating God's qualities, but those God's qualities are inherent within us also, and we can develop those qualities to the fullest of extent, and that will also might be a form of worship to God. That's just a point of view that I needed clarification with.
As I understood it, in other scriptures there's punishment and removal of abilities in a person if that person hasn't developed their abilities to the fullest extent. But in, I guess, the Vedas, the emphasis may be on God appreciating those persons who use their abilities in a particular way according to, I guess, how they're made up. And an example was given that Krishna's appreciating Arjuna. So I'm paraphrasing the question as it was given and using that terminology. appreciating Arjuna, developing his ability as a Kshatriya rather than, you know, being a mendicant. And then the other part that was added to the question was, could one not develop those abilities that, or qualities that are the same as God's that are present in oneself? That was what I understood. Well, I certainly can't speak for what other scriptures say, since I'm not knowledgeable and haven't studied in detail the scripture that was quoted, the Bible, so I can't comment on that. But one can say something of the nature of God, who, from the Vedic standpoint, is a person, and he has a name. His particular name is Krishna, which means that he's completely blissful, he's completely knowledgeable, and he is a personality who is understood to be extremely merciful, which means that he's extremely kind. So in that kindness, or that from that position of kindness, he actually is reciprocating where there's a relationship that somebody is attempting to establish with him. So the reciprocation is in the form of benediction, which means that there's guidance as to what needs to be done by the particular person who's attempting to have a relationship with him. And that guidance doesn't come from one's own mind, that one decides what it is that God should be doing. It doesn't mean that one is demanding of God or Krishna that he behave in a certain way according to what one wants or believes should be his behavior. Rather, the position is that a person is bowing down at the lotus feet of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having no expectation, having only a desire to serve him, understanding his position and understanding that one is wishing to develop a relationship with him. So if one approaches with that understanding, as opposed to the understanding that one is going to tell God what it is that he needs to do for one or how it is that he needs to behave with one, then he will respond according to the level of surrender, and in which case his response to the level of surrender can be to bestow abilities that may not even have been present. And he may enhance some abilities, but that is his choice. He chooses. So he's not actually seeing it that a particular person must be praised for their efforts, because he is the one who is permitting anything to take place. So from the devotional standpoint, one takes the position that one is subservient to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one is not actually taking the position that according to how one's mind is demanding he behaves, that is what he's supposed to do. That is not a devotional position. That's the answer. Thank you. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.